You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Glenn McGee coming to you from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Friday, February the 6th, episode 3879. This episode is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. Good morning, horse world. Well, Jamie is unexpectedly out this morning. I am sure we will hear all about that on Monday. I'm not even quite sure why, but she contacted me late last night, so to stay tuned to Monday to find out what that's all about. Fortunately, the guest we had planned for today is an old friend of the show, and we had planned to do our Where Are We Now segment with her. Well, that's now turned into a one-on-one entire episode. Erin Gilmore has been coming on our shows for 15 years, is a friend of ours in the photography journalism world. And her and I had a fun conversation that took us many different directions. Let's just say my ADD is off the charts today, and Erin was kind enough to put up with it. But first, we have some daily winnies and some really bad ad prizes to give away.
From the podcast to the barn, here's some hidden birthday wishes to keep you warm. Hope it lasts all year long. Happy birthday, friends.
Our auditor birthdays today are Laura Alhamzwari. I hope I got that right. Sorry, Laura. Paige Reardon and my good friend and mentor in the podcasting world, Dave Jackson of the School of Podcasting. I'm actually hosting his show, his live show, with him tomorrow morning. It's called Ask the Podcast Coach. And he asked me to co-host this week. Thank you, Dave. We'll see you tomorrow morning. And I wanted to give away the prizes before we get to the interview that we've had for the whole month for Really Bad Ads. The following products were provided by StatelineTac.com, Hove to over 120,000 products for your barn, horse, and you. There was first the Amigo Close Contact Saddle Pad, and that was worth $50. It combines durability, breathability, and comfort to ensure the best performance for your horse. Made from hard-wearing polycotton material, the saddle pad is designed for long-lasting use. And I had Jennifer pick the winners this month, so the winner, Ursina Studhalter, was the winner of the Close Contact Saddle Pad. Congratulations, Ursina. And then the Amigo Polo Wraps, they're $34.95 value. They're the fleece bandages that offer flexibility, comfort, style, making them an essential addition to your horse's gear. These bandages can be used in the stable, while traveling, or during exercise to provide added protection and support. These are really nice polo wraps. And the winner for that is Heather Brower. So congratulations to Ursina and Heather for your prizes. We'll be getting in touch with you to get those shipped out to you as well. All right, let's hear from Kentucky Performance Products, our title sponsor for today, and then we're going to go into an uninterrupted interview that I think you're all going to enjoy, a little bit about everything, with Erin Gilmore. This Nutrition Minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, the company that simplifies your search for research-proven nutritional supplements at kppusa.com.
Have you heard of Saccharomyces boulardii? It's a yeast, a type of probiotic. Often referred to as S. boulardii, it benefits your horse's digestive tract in several different ways. One unique property of S. boulardii is that it supports the stimulation of something called brush broader membrane enzymes that are found in the intestinal lining. These enzymes help your horse digest starches and sugars in the small intestine. When the sugars and starches are more completely digested, fewer of them escape into the hindgut where they can ferment and cause imbalances that lead to colic, diarrhea, and laminitis. Saccharomyces boulardii is found in Nalox Advance, made by Kentucky Performance Products. Nalox Advance contains a blend of yeast, fermentation solubles, and stomach buffers. These ingredients work together to maintain your horse's digestive tract in peak condition. Nalox Advance is recommended for horses of all ages and stages and is fed on a daily basis.
This Nutritional Minute has been brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. You can find all of their terrific products at kppusa.com.
Join us as we chat with past guests to find out, where are they now?
Well, we're really enjoying the Where Are They Now segments this year, and we have somebody who's been on our show. Matter of fact, she started coming on the Stable Scoop show 15 years ago, and she is an equestrian photographer, also, I would say, a writer and a journalist and an editor. You've done all those roles. Erin Gilmore is back with us, and she also helped us a lot with our coverage of the World Equestrian Games in 2018. Hey, Erin.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. This is so great.
You know, I think most people know you for your photography, and I think that's why we started having you on a long time ago. But then in 2016, we had you on regularly all year. You were kind of our reporter in Wellington. You were kind of giving us the updates on what was happening in Wellington, and that included social and, you know, shows and everything.
Right.
It was fun. I remember that. That's almost 9 years ago. Do you believe that?
Yeah, 9 years ago, I was very, very deep into the top level show jumping in Wellington life. I was living in Wellington year round at that time.
Now, were you a show jumper growing up?
Growing up, yep, all show jumping all the time. It was my main passion. And I was riding 100 jumpers all the way through, my last jumper retired in 2019, I think. And he was my last jumper. He's still in my backyard. He's 26 now, so he's retired in my backyard.
Oh, wow. That's great. Yeah. And when did the photography come into the mix?
The photography came into the mix when I was an equine journalist, after a few years in, just to take photos along with the articles I was writing. But it really went full time for me when I moved to Virginia in 2018. And I started building my business as a horse show photographer, which I never expected to do. It was not really part of the plan, but the more I did it, the more I loved figuring out how to do it well. And that is how my business has grown the last 7-8 years.
That's amazing. And you started out, I remember you at Noel Floyd, but you did some of the magazines too.
Earlier. Yeah, Sidelines Magazine. I made their Facebook page. I'm very dating myself right now. I told them what Facebook was a long time ago. And out in California, California Riding Magazine was where I started years ago.
Is that right? But did you grow up in California?
I did. I'm from Northern California, from Oakland, California.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that either. Learning so much. Now, you don't live in Wellington right now. You're in Virginia.
I moved to Virginia in 2018, like major horse country. Yeah, I went there randomly just to visit some friends of mine who'd moved there from California because I'd never seen Virginia and I hadn't seen them in a while. And I instantly was like, this is amazing. I can't believe I've never been here. So I visited them a couple times and then ended up moving full time after winter season of 2018.
And what part of Virginia?
So Northern Virginia, Loudoun County, big horse area. Everybody knows Middleburg, Virginia. I live about 45 minutes away from Middleburg, Virginia, in a little town called Lovettsville.
I can picture it. Rolling Hills, right?
Rolling Hills, stone walls, fox hunting, epicenter of fox hunting, things like that. Epicenter of eventing, more importantly for my life and career.
Because you're kind of in the eventing world now.
Yeah. I just wrote an article about this for your, is it your sister, so kind of sister station, Heels Down?
Yes. Yep. They're here on the network. Yep.
Right. I can't believe I can say I jump solid logs and tables because you would not have caught me doing that ever in my life as a jumper. But yeah, I do now. I got the right horse for it. And living in Virginia, all of your friends end up being eventers. They were all eventers. So I have a lot of good friends.
They're eventers and fox hunters, usually both.
Yeah. They're fox hunters too. Yeah, my trainer does both. Yeah. She does fox hunting and she does eventing and dressage. So it was a few years of me watching it. And then I started photographing it a lot. So getting to know the sport as a photographer at all levels, I really started to learn a lot. Previously, you know, I covered it for you guys at WEG and I'd covered eventing at the Olympics and knew it at like the big, big level for sure. But there's such a massive grassroots level of eventing and the entry level is much more realistic than the entry level of show jumping.
You know, obviously Jamie and I are partial to it. Jamie's an eventer. My wife was an eventer all, you know, for many, many, many years until she got tired of breaking things. and, you know, you did it backwards. Usually people start in eventing and then they go to other things because they're tired of breaking things. You went show jumping to eventing. You actually did it backwards.
Eventing is friendly, you know, they don't judge you if you're too scared to jump anything big. And if you want to jump a little tiny pole on the ground forever, like that's totally fine. And so like you can just take your time moving up. And the horse I got as a 4-year-old, I started with him a little bit when he was 5. And so together we've been moving up the levels. And I always feel like it's a go at my own pace. So several times now I've gotten to a level where previously I said, hell no, I won't jump that. But confidence grows, and I'm a much more confident rider now.
You know, it is interesting. I think endurance and eventing are probably the two down-to-earth disciplines, and we cover them all. And I just think those two are the most down-to-earth, most accepting, and most least judgmental.
I would totally agree with that. And I have, you know, I have some authority to say it. I've living in Wellington for 9 years and doing show jumping for 25 years. And, you know, now I'm a dressage rider, you know, eventing forces you to ride dressage. Never in my life had I like consciously or actively.
Yeah, most show jumpers don't look at dressage and go, I want to do that.
Right, right. So we've come to really like our dressage, you know, our dressage punishment shows and lessons.
You know, it's interesting. You did a episode of Heels Down, one of our sister shows, and it was in 2021 on why can't horse shows be affordable?
Right.
I feel like you could do that whole thing over again, and it hasn't changed, or it's gotten worse.
Oh, no. It's gotten worse. Yeah. And watching show jumping in USF as a spectator sport is a lot nicer than trying to enter A circuit shows. But, you know, it's something I just understand from a couple different angles. And I, as a photographer, I partner with really wonderful A-Circuit hunter jumper shows. Upperville is my, quote, local.
The classic, huh?
Show. The classic. That's an amazing show. You know, that's the oldest hunter jumper show in the country, and it's a USF Heritage show. It's amazing. And in 2019, I worked all spring with my jumper to do the 3-foot hunters. I trained for Upperville. I said, I want to show at Upperville once in my life. Because it's just this amazing, prestigious show. We worked and worked and worked. We got to Upperville. We were dressed for the part. He was braided. I lost so badly. I had just worked my ass off all spring just to go to Upperville and lose. But at least I got over a few jumps and went there and made it happen. And then I was like, okay, why am I doing the 3-foot hunters? I don't have the, you know, the training program, the money, the anything. And a year later, I retired my horse during COVID. And, you know, not that I wouldn't go back to it, but eventing just been an interesting and like new path. And also Virginia has like amazing resources for eventing. We can show, we can school, we can go to another farm. Everything is within an hour of me. And that is just makes life like really fun and appealing.
We have a lot of listeners in that area who are eventers, you know, who are doing eventing. And we had the opportunity to visit Jacqueline Burke up there.
She's so great.
Oh,
love
she
her.
Is terrific. And we stayed at her farm and, you know, got to see that whole world there. And she's been listening to our shows, I think, for as long as you've been coming on them.
She's awesome.
You know, by the way, I should have warned the listeners that this interview will be very ADD because we both are and we end up talking about everything. But I want to get back to the
call.
And I didn't warn you this was going to happen, but, you know, you've addressed the issue of the cost of doing shows. Jamie and I talked about it on Wednesday's show about we don't understand how anybody affords the show anymore. I don't know how they afford to do it.
Well, either they just start, you know, in the 1%, so it just doesn't matter. So that doesn't change for them. Or, you know, they're like me and they look at an entry level in a different discipline where an expensive weekend is, I don't know, $450, not $2,000. And I'm talking an amateur level. Of course, FEI and the elite riders, it costs more for sure. But even so, you know, this is the first time in my life, for example, I've ever been able to afford going south with my horse as an adult amateur, right? Going on a winter trip to go train and ride and show. And we did it 2 years ago with my barn, and we're going in 3 weeks down to Aiken, South Carolina. And, you know, when all is said and done for 2 weeks of riding and going to two shows and competing and schooling, I don't know, it's going to be like $2,000 maybe for 2 weeks. And it just doesn't compare to the other disciplines that you're going to the A circuit and it's $2,000 for 4 days of showing. Mm. So that's why I say the entry level in these other disciplines they're more friendly. They're there. And I'm talking within privilege of saying, oh, I can spend $2,000 in the winter. Like, I'll acknowledge that. Right. But I've always felt like there's other ways, and I'm never going to stop riding and I'm never going to stop participating, because it's the reason I work so hard, is to participate and have fun. So finding another discipline that I really felt was welcoming, that I could do, that is a challenge, like, oh my God, enormous challenge, but has so much community around it, has really felt like I found another home in another discipline.
That's fantastic. And I think 15 years ago, when we talked to you, you would not have said that at all.
Oh, no. And I'm 15 years ago, I'm looking at logs and tables and going, no, absolutely. And I love show jumping. The show jumping phase of eventing is my comfort zone.
Right.
It's great. I go in there and not stressed at all. So
dressage, on the other hand.
Dressage is just, you know, I love competing. So dressage doesn't make me nervous, but I want to do it well. And I have a green horse, and it's such a slow, hard process. It teaches you emotional regulation. That's like a phrase from my good friends who are horsemanship trainers at Riding Far. So they say emotional regulation in riding. It's actually like emotional regulation in dressage to get you to, you know, hopefully not losing in dressage.
So I have to ask you a question. You know, I have known you for a long time, and I wouldn't say you're a perfectionist, but you do like to get things right. I mean, you're at the edge there. How has photography taught you to be more of a perfectionist, or taught you to deal with things better?
Yeah, I've been called worse things than a perfectionist, and I would say perfectionist is true.
I don't think you're quite there. I've seen perfectionists. I think you're close.
If you got inside my system of horse show photography and spent a day with myself and my team, you would probably rethink that. We are perfectionists. And, you know, I took that task of horse show photography that, you know, on one end is completely overwhelming when you take 20,000 photos in a day. And then on the other end, from the rider customer, you just want to share with the world that you just showed your horse at whatever level, and this is what you did today. And you have this like deep driven desire to get those photos. Like, I get that, right? Because I ride and I show myself. So going from both ends was like, okay, don't make it overwhelming for us as photographers, and then serve the need of people who just want really great photos right away. So perfectionist, maybe a little OCD, I built a system that streamlined horse show photography into something that provides like amazing photos that you don't have to sift through and you don't have to wait for, that are available at your fingertips. And then it was a couple years, you know, of sitting there till 1 a.m., 2 a.m. editing photos and figuring it out and training other people. But I now, today, after 8 years, I have 28 weeks of horse shows I do as official photography. I have a team of 20 photographers I work with around the country, and, you know, training them to the skill level of like where we're all equals has been amazing. I have like the best team of people around me in the industry, in the world. I think they just share my desire to like do a good job and get it right. And yes, like be perfectionist. We have not lost a photo in years. We have not missed a ride in years. We haven't even made anyone wait longer than 2 days in years for their photos. Our turnaround is like the same day or the next day.
You know, it's amazing. People think, you know, and if I had this comment too about covering events, there is, oh, you're so lucky to, you know, cover all 17 days of the World Equestrian Games.
Yeah.
And we are that, we are fortunate to be there, but it's work. You know, what our day starts when we go home. That's when our day starts. Everybody else is drinking and relaxing and having dinner, and we're trying to get stuff done, right? So, I mean, worse for photographers than even for us on our side. We're always trying to find the interviews for the next day. So in the evening, we're doing that, editing what we already did, but also looking at the next day content. It's a constant content creation process.
And that's that's how I learned when I was doing reporting and journalism and trying to get breaking news out the door and, you know, making that happen alongside photography. I mean, in a way, without writing articles and covering the sport as a journalist and just focusing on photography, you know, I've been able to accelerate that side of it much easier. And our day starts in eventing days before when we walk the cross country course.
True.
So I go to a horse show. I memorize every single cross country course at every single level, map it out, and then send out, you know, six or eight people to cover cross country at a big event. So, you know, we're out there with the riders walking it on Wednesday or Thursday sometimes.
You also cover an event that's really close to where I live here in Ocala. And that's one of my favorite events because I'm a carriage driver, is Live Oak, the largest carriage event in the United States. And that's coming up.
I love Live Oak so much. That horse show is so unique with CSI four-star show jumping and combined driving. Once a year on that amazing facility run by this incredible family. I always say, like, if Level Up was a person, that person would be Chloe Reed, who runs that show with her uncle Chester Weber and competes at the upper levels of show jumping. And you've never seen somebody work so hard, get on her horse, jump a Grand Prix, get off. It's amazing what she does. And because of how genuine they are and how much they care about that horse show, it just creates like this incredible atmosphere. I feel lucky and grateful every single time I return there as official photographer. It is just like an unbelievable week. And yes, it's Florida in March, so
it's not bad.
Very welcome.
Plus, it must be fun. I would think photographing those carriages in those water complexes and everything they do.
Yeah.
You normally get to do horses and riders, but the carriage and the horses and the whole thing just adds a whole new level to photography.
It does. And it's there's a little bit of similarity, like with a cross country course where, you know, you need to go to the certain hazards. And I have a couple of people helping me now. I used to kind of try and do it alone and run my feet off it. But they added a one-star show jumping division, so I was able to grow the team a little bit to cover everything. But yeah, it's like the carriage driving and the youth division they started. Mm-hmm. It's maybe their third year in the youth division, but they're like working so hard to grow combined driving by growing this youth division. Seeing them in the morning, the like very small kids, all the way up to
with the cutest Weber. Ponies ever.
Oh, the cutest ponies. There was a tiny little mini pony last year. It was amazing. Hopefully she'll be back this year. But the getting through the crowd, because there's always an amazing crowd at Live Oak, and getting to the obstacles, you know, in time for the riders that we need to really like shoot. It's a really, really exciting day. And then just to add on to it, the show jumpers just walking through all of this up to the warm up ring just really tells you what horses are capable of, because they do a show jumping class during the marathon day. There's so many things for people to watch at Live Oak. Last year I was doing both of those things, but then they were harnessing the Budweiser Clydesdales. And so there was this massive like Pied Piper crowd around the Budweiser Clydesdales. And I went and climbed on a golf cart and tried to get those photos of everybody just like, they're so drawn to those Budweiser Clydesdales, right? Harnessing them, watching them.
It is fascinating.
It's fascinating.
I own draft horses and I still like to watch it.
those guys, their operation is amazing. And then the marathon is happening at the same time and people are going through the obstacles. I think I've been photographing with them at Live Oak for maybe 7 years. Every year I learn a little bit more about combined driving because I'd only really seen it at WEG. That's the only other place I've seen combined driving is WEG. WEG and Live Oak. And Live Oak is the national championships of combined driving. So I learn more. I love watching actually the dressage phase of combined driving. And then on Sunday morning, the cones phase is in the Grand Prix ring where they're going around the show jumps. That's always fun. And all of this is just like visually so incredibly exciting to photograph, not just the marathon, but all three phases. And, you know, now that I am a quote eventer and spend a lot of my time trying to get dressage right for myself and my horse, I can relate more to those carriage drivers. They're doing dressage tests. They're driving
with two or four horses that have to do it.
Oh, It's incredible. And it's so worth going out to that show and experiencing what horse sport should be in this country, which is just amazing crowds and amazing sport.
I wish more people would come in to see that show in March every year. I wish they had had the crowds of a Rolex, for instance, because sure. I think it's so underrated.
They're close, underrated. No, Glenn. They're close.
They're getting up there.
They're close.
And now that WAC's right across the street, literally, you have so much to do when you're there.
You do. But the unique thing about Live Oak is that you have that 1 week of Live Oak. It's not an every week occurrence.
Yeah.
And it really does make it special. And the organizers care so deeply about making it special. So they did break some attendance records last year on Marathon
Day. Did they?
Day.
Oh, good.
Yeah, they did. They did. I know, really,
it's crowded.
Really well. It's crowded. They work with the community. They do a ton of outreach. They are so good. They're just, like I said, if Level Up was a person, like, that defines that show for me.
You know, I've known Chester Weber, who owns that property, for, I don't know, as long as I've been doing this. And he is great. Well, he is very involved in the community. He's involved in a lot of the organizations in the community. He's involved in nonprofits in the community of Ocala. I would say, as a horse person, he's probably more involved in community efforts than any horse person in town. He really is.
And he's so impressive as a person. You know, we had some rain last year during the Grand Prix, and there was a rain delay, and it was significant. But then the field drained, and they came back and finished the Grand Prix. And I was looking at him and watching him. I was like, God, he must be so stressed out. Like, there's a rain delay. You know, people don't want to stand in the rain and watch, etc. And he was walking across the field, and he was like, I'm so happy. Look at how, you know, well my ring drained. Like, this is such amazing proof that this is one of the best show jumping grass fields in the country. And I was like, your perspective is just amazing. And he was right. Of course. Like, it was great. Yeah. He's great to work with.
Well, I'm going to change gears here a little bit. I was actually spending a little bit more time with you. One, because Jamie couldn't make today, and I have more time, which I'm really glad about, actually. And we go back so long together, almost 20 years each doing this whole thing. And I asked where we met, and you think, and I have no idea, to be honest, you think we met at an American Horse Publications event. It must have been one of the first ones I went to.
It may have been like there was some kind of podcast topic or meeting, and I said, what is a podcast? You know, I was first published as a writer and journalist when I was 19. So that was my first equestrian journalism job, as an assistant editor and writer, when I was like still in college. So somewhere in there in my very early 20s, there was this guy named Glenn, and he said, had something called a podcast. And, you know, you've really stuck with it since then. Very, very impressive, Glenn.
Well, you know, I had trouble getting into the American Horse Publications, and they wouldn't even let me become a member, because they didn't know what a podcast was, and nobody knew what a podcast was, to be honest. But then I did, and I met so many of my friends today I met through those meetings. I sold Horse Radio Network because of an American Horse Publications. I was sitting beside Kim Brown. And I happened to mention that a couple of companies were looking at buying me. And she said, hold on, let me talk to my boss, and left and called and came back and said, don't do anything till you talk to my bosses. And that's how that came about was because of that. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that. We've seen journalism in the horse world change over the last 20 years. I like to think I'm a little part of how that changed into a different form, additive form, really. But then, you know, you heard the news. Of course, I'm owned by Equine Network now. And then we just announced last week, and I just found out last week, that we were bought out by a much larger sports organization who used to own F1 Racing.
Okay.
It was published. It was $300 million to buy Equine Network. So a lot of people there's mixed opinions on that. I'm looking at that going, you and I and people like us have fought for years to go get our sport more into the mainstream, to get non-horse people viewing what we're doing. And I'm looking at this as an opportunity. That's what they want to do. They want to bring our sport to more eyeballs and to our sports to more eyeballs and to have more mainstream people looking at horses for what the beauty we see in them. I have always said for years doing the Horse Radio Network, I cannot get non-horse sponsors. I can't get the non-horse sponsors to look at horse sports as a real thing. And now I think for the first time in our evolution, we're seeing that.
I would hope so. That's always been the topic. That's always been the question, right? Like we want to have the reach that golf has.
Tennis,
we
want to
have the living room familiarity that golf has. And we all get really insular and inside baseball about our sport and the way we talk about it, and other people can't understand it. I mean, when I was a full-time journalist, kind of my gold standard rule when I wrote something was, I want the person who doesn't know what a horse hardly is, who doesn't know what this sport is, to be interested in what I'm writing and not only be interested, to understand it. So I developed a really direct style with that in mind, always, no matter if I was talking about, you know, the intricacies of an issue or just coverage of a Grand Prix. That's always going to be the goal. It's going to outlive, you know, you and I. The best we can do is just try and make progress and serve that, right?
I like to think we did, you know, you both in different ways, but I kind of like to think we did. I think, you know, it was a lot of hard work to get there, a lot of 100-hour weeks, you know, for all of us.
Yeah.
That people, again, don't see, you know?
People don't see, but I think there's been a greater understanding of, you know, just, I stepped away from writing and journalism and just, you know, focused on photography. And I talk about photography publicly. I talk about how I've developed my business. I talk about, yes, this is hard work. I'm not just sitting in a field pushing a button and having a margarita, right? Like, this is a intense job to do what I do and bring you what I bring you. So photography, maybe people don't understand the scale of what I've been able to accomplish, which is unheard of among my colleagues and my peers. But if you think about journalism, well, we all are reading, you know, news at every level of our lives. So the independent journalism and holding on to that and, you know, not letting everything get bought out into obscurity is still something so important to sort of focus on. You know, Chronicle of the Horse, right? Bought last year by Grand Prix, that's based in France, and they've gotten torn down for letting go of their whole staff to, I guess, focus on freelancers. You know, a couple people are still standing. Chronicle of the Horse is our institution. I love Chronicle of the
Horse.
Right
down the road from you, actually.
until Glenn, they closed their flagship store in about 2024 because everything's going online, and post-COVID, they never really went back, not their store, their office, right? So that that building is not the Chronicle of the Horse anymore. And the Chronicle of the Horse exists out here in our digital, you know, remote working world. But you watch that, which was the strongest independent equestrian media outlet in the country. And that's going to change and evolve. I think we all hope that the integrity of it and the reach and the quality of journalism stays. But at the end of the day, you know, those kind of things make me feel powerless. Podcasting has grown because we sit and we listen on our phones. I listen to podcasts like so much every single week.
But you're usually doing something else at the time when you're listening, right?
I got stalls to clean. I got a pasture to clean. I got a farm to run. But I got to drive somewhere. You know, we're all doing something. But it keeps us engaged and it keeps us, you know, interested in topics. Like the Heels Down Happy Hour podcast had the United Dressage Jumping Club guy on last week, or I listened to it last week. It was December. Those topics like keep me engaged and I get to hear directly from the people. So, you know, long story short, it's always changing and holding on to it and like lifting up the strong voices in the sport, whether that's, you know, Justine over at Heels Down Happy Hour or Caroline Culbertson, who has her own podcast now and has just a really amazing
interview. To get her back. She was a regular guest on the show too for years.
Yeah. I mean, I've listened to a couple of her conversations have just been amazing.
You know, I think there's more. I'll tell you why I am less concerned about that, about taking away some of that is because I think there's more opportunity now than ever for an individual to get noticed with social media the way it is. And I think those individuals are rising up, and some good, some not. I mean, there's always that. But I think that we do have those individuals that are rising up through social media that are gaining followings. I hate the word influencer, but they are becoming influencers in the, in their space. Some of them are funny and they're comedian. We highlighted a bunch of them in December, the comedians in the horse world that have come up, right? But I don't, you know, that we kind of consider ourselves more on the comedy side than the serious journalism side.
Sure.
But it doesn't matter, right?
They're all the same goal.
Yeah,
right?
they're getting heard. So I think I'm less concerned about the that word you used,
inside baseball.
I can't say that word. I'm less concerned about that because I think there's opportunities for everyday people to be heard. One example is I don't watch mainstream news anymore. However, for some, you know how TikTok and Instagram works. Once you watch one video, then you get all that video.
So much.
I get most of my news from two or three people that I really like and trust on TikTok and Instagram.
I absolutely do the same thing. Yep.
I mean, that would have never happened 10 years. We would have thought that was ridiculous 10 years ago.
We would have thought it was so ridiculous. It wouldn't have made sense to us at all. And the scale of which it's changed and developed is so interesting, right? And you're right. You know, the voices that we have online, that we use them, people respond to them, is so powerful. Whether I'm like, hi, horse show customers, your photos are up. Here's the link. You know, I do that 30 times a year just to like connect with the people I just saw at the horse show, or if I'm speaking on a bigger topic. Yeah. And the people I follow who I trust, whether it's mainstream news or equestrian news, I totally agree with you. I mean, where are we going to be in the next 10 years past this?
So photography and AI, let's talk about AI. I just went to PodFest conference 2 weeks ago, and I lead the pro session, which was professional podcasters, a lot of them making seven figures a year. I mean, these are the guys at the top of
like
the
you,
top.
Like you, right? You make seven figures.
Yeah, I wish. for some reason, I picked horses, you know?
It's
like, I don't know. If I'd picked something else like murder, I would have been much better off. So
there's some good murder podcasts out there, not gonna lie.
Oh, they make all the money. So AI obviously was the topic of conversation. Half the sessions there were about AI. I use AI. AI has helped me in that it helps me save time and prep for shows. It helps me find guests' contact information quicker. Just everything I can use it for, it is an advantage, like having a personal assistant.
Yeah.
However, it's also got its issues. And on the photography side, you guys, I mean, what are your concerns with AI? How are you battling that? What are you doing?
I don't like it. It's a scary smart robot in your computer. Image-wise, you know, if 99% of my business is directly to the person who's keeping their horse in their backyard and really having a great time jumping 2'3", AI is not going to get in between me and that person, because that person's going to want to see their accomplishments, you know, in the photograph I take. So AI is not, you know, faking any of that. Photography wise, I see, you know, the AI photos, and you can just still tell it's not real, obviously. I mean, I battle that just by being authentic and real and writing my own words and, you know, posting my own images. I always will. And I just have to see where it develops. You know, AI helps us a little bit. If like we're editing now, it's easier to edit out a blemish just on the most basic level. And
it used to be editing out backgrounds was a nightmare. And now used to take that forever.
And it still does take me forever, because I still am going to do a lot of that by hand, because it's not good enough to make it look authentic. My work, I do a huge job for Zenger Scheid Stud in Belgium, where I photograph so many of their stallions, and I have to edit those photos because you just can't have a stallion free in a field or free in, you know, a farm. They have to have a lead shank, right? So something as simple as that, taking out the lead shank, is time consuming. But, you know, AI has helped that a little bit. Photoshop has been around way longer than AI. that's where I sort of watch it as a photographer, is how is it starting to affect our editing?
Probably only going to get better.
It will only get better, but it's not going to change the fact that I am working with incredible human beings who are standing out in the sun, and we are all trained to take only the best photo possible in our camera and then put that best photo possible online times the 100 photos that somebody gets at the end of their day. So that is a human brain and human desire and human passion to take an incredible photograph and not take 10 pictures of your butt and then put that online. Like, it's easier for us to do that, right? If AI starts recognizing like rider numbers and helps us sort the photos, great. Like, that technology isn't there for us as riders yet. It's there for like running races. I think they have software now to do that. So maybe it'll help efficiency in that sense.
I think where it's going to help you and businesses like yours is on the business side of things. It's going to help you run the business more efficiently and quicker.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. The personal assistant element of it, where you can sort of dive into research and get answers and sort of understand things faster, is how I felt. You can just get those explanations and be educated on something that you need to learn about. I won't touch what that means for people actually in school now and what they're doing. But, you know, it is kind of a crazy evolution. I'm going to be more of a purist in photography always and sell as a purist in photography. And, you know, what am I going to have to do in 10 years? Oh, I'm a real photographer. I'm not an AI photographer. I'm real.
You're not a robot out there in the middle of the field getting rusty in the rain.
You know, in the rain, in the sun, you know, standing there with my $8,000 worth of camera equipment, like, we're just like, you're never going to AI, you know, replace riding your horse. You're never going to replace like authentic experiences.
It's interesting. I have a friend who is a college professor, and he does, I mean, he's in the business side, and obviously AI in college now has been a thing. Well, he's switched it completely. He has AI now as part of his curriculum for every course he teaches, and actually has him using AI, but he judges it. I'm not going to give away his secret here because I don't know if I'm allowed, but he judges it in such a way that it's part of, you're using AI, but you're also using it in a way to be effective and efficient. So his theory is, we're not going to get rid of this. How can we teach people to use it effectively, still double check all their sources, still do all of that?
That's a big question.
And his point is, it's not going away, so we need to start teaching it. And his college has bought in 100%, and all the teachers now are changing how they're teaching. I think we're going to see that, you know, over time. Oh, just shit. As social media changed what we do, when Twitter and Facebook, and I mean, we were around for the beginning of all of those. They didn't exist when we started.
You're dating us again.
20 years.
Yes. Telling Sidelines Magazine what Facebook was and that we need to start an account was, you know, really.
We were doing blogs. We thought blogs were so cool back then.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were going to put magazines out of business, if you remember right. Blogs were a terror because they were going to put magazines out of business. Never
happened. And magazines are, it's still hard in the magazine game, but that's why you have a media company. Like, owning a magazine just as one part of the business. It's no longer, you know, based in that magazine, right? That evolution, through that, I just hope we don't lose magazines. Like,
I think they're going to change. I think they are changing now.
They've changed.
Yeah, they've changed. There's no question about it. And it partly goes back to that guy in his camera and TikTok who now has a million followers.
Yeah.
It goes back to that, too. So I kind of look at these because you and I have been through all the technological evolutions. I mean, I ran a new media meetup at the Kentucky Horse Park back in what was it, before 2000 or whatever, or in 2008, 2009. And we were talking about the beginning of Twitter and Facebook and what we were going to do about it.
Right.
All this is an evolution that we figure out how to play the game or we don't play the game. I mean,
well, shout out to Sally Spickard of Eventing Nation. Eventing Nation has been a stalwart of, you know, covering the sport of eventing for so many years. I covered the London Olympics in 2012 for Eventing Nation, right? Taking terrible photos and writing about eventing. Sally Spickard last year, she starts a podcast you know, talking about eventing. I think she did maybe 10 episodes. She did such a good job. It drew me in even more.
She's great. I mean, she's terrific. Oh, yeah.
She's a great interviewer. And so, you know, she's adding an asset to Eventing Nation in this incredible podcast and doing these amazing interviews. I listen to every single one. And it's a sport that, you know, I'm involved in and that I care about and that I really want to learn more about. But adding that podcast, you know, last year beginning to end was just so impressive. I've told her this too, but, you know, everyone should go and not just support her podcast and listen to it, but it should lend more weight to Eventing Nation, right? Because they're still there covering the sport digitally. They've always been a website. It just shows that you can take the, you know, quote, new media as a podcast and add to your news source and, you know,
yeah, it hasn't taken away from the articles they do on the website.
It's the model of the New York Times and the Daily. Daily podcast is one of the, you know, top podcasts in the country and, you know, modeled from the New York Times, just coverage.
So interesting note there, John Thayer, who started Eventing Nation, came to my first new media meetup meeting when he was first beginning back all those years ago.
Can you do a Where Is He Now, like, episode with him?
Yes, I need to. I talked to him recently. Actually, we spent a half an hour catching up because I grew this Horse Radio Network. He grew that at the same time. We were kind of doing it, you know, hand in hand. Yeah. And then Leslie Wiley, of course, was on our show for years. We just had her back on to do a Where Are They Now? And she's finally forgiven me for challenging her to do the Mongol Derby.
That was your fault.
It was my fault, actually. But, you know, we won awards because of episodes that Leslie was on, you know, because she's such a great storyteller. And Sally's just as good. So, you know, it's so interesting when I take a look back. I'm nostalgic this year for some reason. When I take a look back at all of us that kind of grew up together, you know, and we were told that we weren't going to, you know, and I almost quit podcasting about 20 times, you know, over those years, because it took a lot longer for people to figure out podcasts than I thought it would.
It did. Mm. Yeah. You've been proven very right since one of those first meetups.
Yep. And I said it was going to be a thing. It just took a lot longer to become a thing.
But it is so very much a thing and so much a part of our daily lives and hopefully still, you know, helping increase our support within our sport, but helping increase our reach going outside of it.
And this show, we always meant it to be entertainment because I never thought there was enough entertainment in the horse world. We took ourselves too seriously. Yeah. So I was lucky to find Jamie, you know, 16 years ago, who was an entertainer. And, you know, I had an acting company. I'm an entertainer too. So we always wanted to be entertainment first and education second. And I think on this show, we've accomplished that for almost 4,000 episodes now.
It should be entertainment. Yeah. You know, Live Oak International is entertainment. Entertainment for all the spectators who come in on a Saturday. It's pure entertainment.
It's pure entertainment. They have everything there. Watching the dogs walk around is entertaining.
You know, they had a dog jump last year. Yes. One of those dog jumps into pools. Like,
yes.
That was
fun.
Yeah.
All right. So if people want to go to Live Oak, it's Live Oak Internet.
Live Oak International. Yeah. And I think the website's just liveoakinternational.com. It's really easy to buy tickets. March, I know I'll be there March 8th or 9th. So it's that weekend of like March 9th, 10th, 11th. I'm sorry if I'm getting that date.
And the Saturday will be a marathon. The show jumping.
Saturday is the only day like it in this whole country where you have combined driving marathon plus elite four-star show jumping happening at the same time, on that grounds, and that beautiful, you know, grounds with the live oak trees. They're literally, Glenn, there's no other day in equestrian sport like that day. And that's why they get thousands of people.
And then you can drive across the street and have dinner at one of the 14 restaurants over at the World Equestrian Center.
Is it okay that I can tell you I call WEC Disneyland plus Las Vegas with horses?
It is. That's a perfect description, actually. I'm going to steal that. That's a perfect description.
But it is fun to go have a drink there.
Yes, it is. I mean, that also has an atmosphere. Erin, where can people find your work?
Erin Gilmore Photos is my website, and that's my hub for all of my show photography. I do a ton of private photography also every year. Northern Virginia, I think people know me in that area, but, you know, I'm back home to my home base in the Bay Area every once in a while, and you can follow me, you know, just like you said, right? Instagram and the Facebook. We're there.
You know, we they say good friends are people that you cannot talk to for a while, and then you just have a conversation, and you can talk forever. And I consider you a good friend because we do that. I mean, it's we cannot talk for 2 years and talk like it's been 2 days.
So true. And I so appreciate that. And I'll come on anytime. You need a deep dive into some show jumping issues, I'm there for you.
Back your back. We want the deep dive into the gossip of what's going on behind the scenes. That's what we want.
It's Wellington. There's no lack of that. That's for sure.
There was that one bar we used to have somebody come on and give us a report on the how many cars were left at the bar on Monday mornings. So that one bar.
Right? Oh, man. Well, no, I'm putting in my couple days at Wellington, then I'm going back up north to fight the storm. So
that's all I can do at Wellington is a couple days at a time. Erin, you've been delightful. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next month.
Yeah, I'll see you next month at Live Oak. Yep, so nice good. To talk to you. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Erin. Well, thank you for joining us today, everybody. We'll look forward to seeing you again here on Monday. Have a fantastic weekend. I hope it thaws out where you are. I hope you get to see your horses, actually ride your horses, maybe see the ground instead of it being white in some places. That'd be cool, too. So have a terrific weekend. Be safe, and we'll see you here Monday morning on Horses in the Morning.